Good morning, everybody. It says 9 o'clock on my watch, so we're going to at least get started. We have another panelist who will be joining us. Welcome, good for you for being up so early, but your alarms probably work if you're travelers, so here we are. I'm Lori, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lori.
And I am from Los Angeles, as are the other two women here, but we are at the airport, as you know. We have found that traveling presents a lot of issues for us as compulsive eaters. I'm supposed to be using a mic. Pardon me.
We can hear you.
There's your other.
Okay, that's for the recording. The problems of traveling, time change, the exhaustion when you're traveling and doing so many different things. You're totally off any schedule you have usually, or it's easy to get off. And there's always the sampling something new, the local cuisine issue. The panel is going to discuss the issues around abstaining while we travel. It's obviously open to anyone, whether you're a world traveler or not, because even the weekends out on the beach or wherever you go can give us challenges. We're going to hear from each of our speakers for 20 minutes. And then we're going to have a 20-minute question and answer period at the end. Without further delay, I'm going to ask Nikki. Oh, sure. Greg, are you available to start for us this morning? Would you please then, let's welcome Greg, and I will give us signs of where time is coming up.
I'm Greg.
Hi, Greg.
And don't forget that. I'm Greg, compulsive eater from the Phoenix, Arizona area. I have been to the OA birthday a few years now. It's fantastic. Nice and close to Phoenix. About 10 years ago, I took a trip to Israel. I did research ahead of time. This was before recovery. I came in 8 years ago, 8.5 years ago. I was doing research, not for the best archaeological sites, not for the best religious sites, not for the best scenery. What do you think I was researching before going to Israel? The best restaurants. And not only that, I had a very specific interest in the best buffet in Israel. I found it in East Jerusalem at the American Colony Hotel. Only a compulsive eater would remember these type of things from a long time ago, right? Then I came into OA in the summer of 2006. I didn't become abstinent until December of 2008, 2.5 years later. So since December of 2008 until today, I'm maintaining a 50-pound weight loss. And I've been absent since then, which has been an absolute miracle. The only way that has occurred is, of course, by working the steps and using the tools and doing all that type of stuff, but also by staying abstinent while on the road. Because I do travel a lot, mostly for pleasure, but sometimes business and pleasure. So I travel a lot. And one of the things that I've learned is that traveling can mean going just 10 miles from home. It doesn't necessarily mean having to go overseas like to Israel, right? This is traveling for me in Los Angeles from Phoenix. Or it could be, if I'm at home in Phoenix, it could be going to the other side of town for a business meeting. Traveling does not mean going overseas. It does not. These type of things that I do can be useful for others no matter where you're traveling. I even wrote an article for our local newsletter. It's been published a couple times. It's called How I Stay in Recovery on the Road One Day at a Time. And that's really what it's all about. People think when we travel, it's a bit of a hassle, right? It's a bit of a hassle to stay abstinent while traveling. I don't have my refrigerator, I don't have my scale. I don't have my special foods that I, and the special markets that I go to, and only this restaurant I'm allowed to eat in because they have abstinent food. So we don't have that. But who here can recall the days when it wasn't so much of a hassle to find the best buffet all the way in Israel, right? It wasn't that much of a hassle when traveling to do research on the best such and such. It wasn't that much of a hassle to grab fast food anywhere just because I'm out of town. When I traveled, that was my excuse to really, really go for it. And I remember my wife and I were in Europe a few times. And because of the time zone change, it's absolutely fantastic to travel across many time zone change when you're not in recovery. Because I can eat 6 meals a day. I would stick to my Arizona time. And then all of a sudden, it's lunchtime, an hour later, right? So I had to have lunch because I got to try that particular restaurant. And then 2 hours later, it's Arizona dinner. And then I can have dinner again. So it's fabulous. 6 meals a day. It's a dream come true before program. So as I said, I became absent December of 2008. The pictures are being passed around, maintaining a 50-pound weight loss. Some of the things I do to stay that way, I've written down, and I apply this on this trip. Every single time I travel, I do the same thing in preparation for my food. Why not? It was a hassle looking for those type of restaurants when I used to travel, the fast food, all these type of things. So I'm going to run down a couple of tips of what I do when I travel to stay abstinent. I do a lot of stuff before I leave home. I don't just give it a chance to when I'm going to be somewhere, what's going to happen, or what the meals are. So before I leave the house, I put meetings down on my schedule, on my phone, from the local area. That's the first thing that goes on my schedule, because I fit my life into OA. I don't try to fit OA into my life. And I still have a life when I travel. So the first thing I do is I put the OA meetings on my schedule in the location that I'm going to do a visit. Who knows where you can find out-of-state OAs, meetings? Do you all know how? Right? On OA.org. Okay, very easy. And then I pick up the telephone. I call the contact people of these meetings and say, hey, I'm Greg from Phoenix. I'm coming to visit. I just want to verify the information on the meeting. And then I just start to chit-chat as well. So it's wonderful. When I walk into that meeting, oh, you must be Greg from Phoenix. And then there's that welcoming feeling, right? That welcoming feeling when you go into a new meeting. I also call a lot of local people. I call guys in the area that I'm going to visit and say, hi, I'm Greg. I'm coming into town. Is it okay if I call you if I have food issues or I'm thinking of eating compulsively or I don't know where to go to get abstinent food? And I start to build up my fellowship contact list that way. It's been really amazing. I have every place I go, I have names of people, names of guys. It's fantastic. I really encourage everyone to do that. If I don't have a car to get to a meeting, I'll pick up the phone and call the contact person, right? Is there anyone to give me a ride? It's very easy, very, very easy. And I always have my books, my OA books. You say, well, oh, my God, they're so heavy. I'm already 50 pounds with my suitcase. They're never going to let me through. I'm going to have to pay extra charges. If you have a phone, does anyone in the room have a telephone, a cell phone? How many of you have your OA material on your phone, the big book, different reading materials? Raise your hand again. A lot of hands went up. Always carry it with you. That way you always have program with you. When I'm traveling on the plane, now that is a challenge for anybody. Does anyone else have challenges eating absently airport on the plane? There's a little unknown trick to traveling. Do you know going through security, you're allowed to take anything frozen? Anything frozen goes through the TSA lines. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything frozen goes through the TSA lines. So what I do, and I did this here, I have a cooler bag, I'll pack my lunch in there. I'll put a lot of ice in there. I may even put ice packs that are frozen. I'll dump the ice right before I go through the security, big plastic Ziploc bags. As soon as I'm on the other side of security, what do you think I do? I fill up the bag again with ice. So there's no issue of keeping food cold through the airports. I never have an excuse now to say, oh my God, I'm late, I'm hungry, I'm in a rush, I'm going to go to such and such and pay twice as much for fast food, or three times as much. So I don't do that anymore. There's a lot of different techniques you can use when you travel, and they all work to keep my program in place, to keep me abstinent while I'm on the road. There's no reason for me to break my abstinence, to break my recovery, just because I'm over a state line or in a different zip code. There's no excuse whatsoever for that. So I have a lot of techniques I use when I'm traveling. One of my favorite ones is to bring an empty bottle of water, because you can't bring the water through security, and then refill it on the other side, a big bottle of water. And I find if you drink a lot of water, you're less hungry. And it also helps the hydration on the airplane because the air is so dry. That's another thing I do. When I get to the destination, I always ask for a room with a refrigerator. How many people in this room are staying in this hotel? Of the people that have their hands up, keep them up. There's a lot of hands. If you don't have a refrigerator in your room, put your hand back down if you do not. Almost everybody's hands went down because they don't have a refrigerator in their room. Do you know if you ask for a refrigerator and say it's for medical purposes at a hotel, they will give you a refrigerator and they will not charge you? They will not charge you for a refrigerator if you request it for medical purposes because of your food plan or whatever else. They don't ask me, well, what are your medical problems that you need a refrigerator, right? They don't ask you that. I always get a refrigerator. I bring my food with me, fresh vegetables, whatever it is I need. I put it right in the refrigerator when I get to the hotel. I research the restaurants around the area. I don't leave my eating to chance. It's my responsibility for what goes into my mouth. It's my responsibility for what goes into my mouth. So it's my responsibility to do the research ahead of time. Do we all do research on different types of restaurants when we travel? I call the restaurant. I ask them, can you make such and such in such and such a way? And then they say, well, then let me, and I say, talk to the chef. They always will do it. 9 out of 10 times, they always will do it. The most important thing when traveling, for me, is to continue my recovery activity. The same thing I do when I'm at home. I was having breakfast at the hotel today. That's where I usually do my writing, my plan for the day. I read some meditations. Someone came up to the table where I was sitting and said, can I join you? And I said, no, I prefer some quiet time while I'm eating. Do the same thing in recovery while I'm traveling than I do at home. I always keep that in the back of my mind. What do I do at home to promote my recovery? Why should that be any different than I'm traveling? How many of you keep the exact same recovery program going when you're traveling? Not that many hands go up. That is the key I have found to my recovery. The same exact program. And I will end with this. This question was posed to me by a mentor I have in California. He's been in program for decades. And he would ask me, say, Greg, what are you not willing to do to recover today? What am I not willing to do to recover today? So I ask all of you to think about that when you're traveling. What am I not willing to do when I'm in such and such a town? Oh, I'm not willing to write my food down. I'm not willing to make an outreach call. I'm not willing to go to a meeting because it's a pain in the, right? It's not my regular meeting. I'll walk in there and they'll be all strangers. No, I ask myself, what am I not willing to do here in Los Angeles? So guess what? I already have my lunch done for today. I brought a big Tupperware container. I cut up vegetables before I left. I kept them cold through the airport, right? I got fruit at the hotel. I brought my own dressings, my own salad dressings. I had a friend of mine who was going to a supermarket buy an item that I couldn't travel with. I'm going to have the same lunch today that I have when I am at home. There's no reason not to. What am I not willing to do when I travel? I want to keep my abstinence. I want to keep my 50 pounds off. And I want to keep turning my whole program over to God because I believe this is what my higher power wants me to do. In order to carry the message, I have to do more than abstaining and recovering in the 85253 zip code. I have to do the same wherever I travel. Now my next trip to Israel, I did go to Israel again. And what do you think, instead of the best buffet in Israel, what do you think I researched on this trip ahead of time? OA meetings, exactly. And I was privileged to go to a few OA meetings there. They asked me to speak. There was a translator. It was really wonderful. I went to meetings in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, a couple other places. The difference before and after. What am I willing to do and what am I not willing to do? And hopefully I focus on what I'm willing to do when I travel. And I wish you all abstinent travels, whether you're going overseas, whether you're going to the East Coast, or whether you're going to Van Nuys. Okay, it's all traveling. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. William, would you please
speak? Do you mind if I stay right here at the table? Thank you. Hi, I'm Lillian. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you. Boy, you're going to get a spectrum of different ways to travel today. Thank you, Greg. I learned so much from you. It was fabulous. Fabulous. A lot of things I never thought of in thousands of years of traveling, but when I first came into the program, this is like 40-something years ago, I was here, and then I lost like 50 pounds, and I was in heaven, and then I went to live in Nashville for 6 months and working on a project. I gained 50 pounds back, and they offered me, if I came back the next year, a refrigerator in my room. I said, it's not enough. No, I said, I'm having too much fun. I can't stand it. And in those days in Nashville, there was no OA. There was AA, like across the bridge and down the river and all of that, and it was old guys that I just didn't relate to at all. So I didn't go back. And a few years later, I'd been abstaining, and I went to Israel to live in a kibbutz, which was fabulous. But there was a 15-year hiatus from OA. That was part of it. Then went and lived in Rome, and I just ate, and I just totally disregarded program. So July 3rd, 1992 is when we'll start, because that's when I started this abstinence. It's 22 years. It's 65, 75-pound weight loss, depending how good I am that week, you know. And part of adventure of travel, I love traveling, is food, is what I can eat. The Mideast is great because the main foods I find are things that I eat. I don't do sugars and breads, and I don't do those are the main things, sugar, sweets, cakes, you know, all those recreational fun foods. I don't do. I do like pizza and tortillas and flatbreads, and I didn't know why until I realized they don't have yeast, and yeast is sugar, and that's what I can't handle. I mean, give me a challah, I'll eat the whole loaf, you know? But other things, they're not interesting. They're somewhat utility foods for me. So when I go on a trip, and I wish I'd thought of planning in advance more to where are meetings and contacting the people, because sometimes I've shown up and it moved, it wasn't there anymore. I've been to a meeting. My daughter lived in Rome for years. I went to a meeting there. It's the only time I brought her along to translate, and it's amazing how this program translates, even if you don't know the language, or I knew it, but not perfect, you know, no fluency. We understood each other. You know, I've been to meetings in London, and then I was in the Peace Corps, and I've been back 3 years now. I lived 28 months in Macedonia, which has no OA, no AA, none of that, even though it's just north of Greece, which I believe has a lot of program. And the interesting thing is that what I found is that if your head is in the right place, you can abstain anywhere. And to me, what's important is what you put in your body in 24 hours. Those 24 hours, your body is the same. I don't care what time zone you're in and where you're traveling. And I have to remind myself of that sometimes. That's the thing that I plan. What time is it there? What would it be for my body? Is it daytime? Is it nighttime? So you don't get in those six extra meals, you know? But I do like adventure. And I've found there's almost no place where I can't find something to eat. You know, there are restaurants in Macedonia that were wonderful, or whatever kinds they are. I have Chinese food here, Chinese food there. Middle Eastern food, Italian, Cyrillic type, Slavic foods and all. And the thing is, these days with electronics, with Skype and email, And there were so many ways for me to communicate back. And I know there are chat rooms and podcasts and all we can listen to that I find no matter where in the world you are, OA is there if we want it to be. I had some books with me that I read. I came back, in fact, in the summer, in the midway of my 2 years, there was a big OA convention, I think. It was in August. And I came to that, and it was great. And I lost 8 pounds total over the 2 years. You do a lot more walking, and not for exercise, but to get from place to place. And it was great because you had to do it. Or taking buses, which is something new if those of us live in L.A., but like New York all came back to me. And I go to New York maybe once or twice a year. I got to confess, I book my theater tickets first. And then because I know the OA meetings there, I've been to several, and once I get that set, I know I can get, I usually will get to one or two meetings if I'm there for 5 days, which is what I do here, one or two meetings over a week. So it's keeping that stability and reading and doing the same thing. It's the thing that comes to me more than anything is to fail to plan, is to plan to fail. And if I can't get up in the morning and look at the day and say, okay, so I have breakfast, so now I'm going to be here or there, and I won't have access to food, and I won't be able to get what I need. So I'll either pack something with me, whether it's a power bar. It'll keep me going for a few hours longer than my normal, which would be 5, maybe 6 hours between meals. And I find when you go to someone's home for dinner, and they say, oh, but you have to try this, you have to try that, you don't have to. And what I've learned over the years, because when I first came into program, it would be, well, I'm sorry I'm on this program and I can't eat it because does it have this and does it have that? Now I just say, no, thank you. And most people will just move right on. Or they'll say, oh, are you sure it's so good? It's special. I say, oh, God, I can see. It's just gorgeous, you know? And thank you so much anyway. And moving on. So that I found it is possible to abstain from compulsive eating and not to be binging and not to be eating foods that are not on my abstinence wherever I am. And I've been traveling. We went to China for 2 weeks on a small group tour around China. That's an easy place for me because it's not Paris. They don't have boulangerie, you know. They don't have all those gorgeous things. That wasn't a problem. And usually I will do when I'm traveling, much as I resented, I'm sure we all did, having to buy food on the plane and coach and all. So if you're in business classes, I want my bubbly and I want to enjoy it. But if I'm in coach, it's so easy to buy something to eat at the airport. They have salads. I haven't found a place that didn't have stuff that I could eat, that I could pick up there. Or sometimes I have brought something with me, like a stuffed pita with tuna or chicken or something, just to be safe. And I think I'm sure we all agree on that. I don't want to take chances, especially if flights are delayed and it's getting way too late and everyone is having junk food around you, the chips flying and all of that. I want to know I have something. Because within, I think we know that it isn't circumstances ever that would make me blow my abstinence. It's me. You know, it's me deciding it's too much bother. I don't care. So what if I have this? I'm not home, so it doesn't count. You know, that's the way in growing up my mother would keep kosher. Shrimp and pork outside, it's okay. It doesn't count. You know? Well, we know that's not true. I mean, with my foods, what I can eat, I can eat. It doesn't matter where I am. It's the same body. It's the same 24 hours. So the thing that I have to do is just think about what I can eat and what I can't. And I know what that is. So there's a great maybe there's more flexibility in my program than some, but it allows me to go anywhere. And really, there was only one time I was at the grandparents' home of the home that I was living with the first 3 months, and there was nothing I could drink. We're not only allowed to drink distilled water. They didn't have, the only thing they had was rakia, which is like a vodka or something. Thank God I'm not on AA. Everything else was sugar-laden. I thought, well, that's it, you know? And that was fine. But that was the closest I came. I'm thinking, what is this? I can't drink anything. Either it's filled with sugar or it's not distilled water. And that was the answer. There's always an answer. I mean, there was always something. If I'm in the right place and I'm willing to think about it and make some effort, and fortunately I eat pastas and all that, so Italy isn't hard. But I don't do the breads and things with sweets or chocolates or any of that. And it doesn't matter where I am. But, yeah, I'll try different foods, veggies and fruits and all that. And it's all a part of the adventure. But my main discovery is that you can abstain anywhere. And I think we're all agreed on that point, you know, that it doesn't matter where you are. Sometimes I have to adjust, but I can make those adjustments. It's just I don't adjust the abstinence. I might adjust where I am and what I'm eating to fit it. And with that, I mean, it's just totally fine. So thank you very much.
please.
Hi, I'm Nikki. I'm a compulsive eater. I'm going to have a really hard time keeping it to 20 minutes, and I will, but this is a topic I'm so passionate about and that has such a big part of my recovery. The wonderful thing about panelists is we all have very, very, very different tales, so I think my tale's going to sound different, and my recovery is based in contrary action to what my disease was, and my disease was a lot of control and a lot of managing of food. What it was like, what happened, what it's like today through the lens of travel. What it was like. I don't think I entered the world a compulsive eater. If I did, I wasn't aware of it. I was a competitive gymnast and a dancer as a little girl. And so I was very wrapped up in fitness and in my body. And as a young girl, I got a fair amount of attention for that. And when I hit puberty, things started to change. My body changed, of course. And normal kids are kind of excited about those changes or roll with those changes. My instinct was to slam my foot on the brakes and say, no, this, I don't want this for me, you know. So a lot of identity wrapped up in sort of being this athletic kid, you know. And when my body started to get softer and I was resistant to this is when I started dieting. And when I started dieting, I started gaining weight. This is like a formula for me that the moment I try to control and manage my food, my body gets bigger. And the space in my head gets smaller and smaller and smaller for anything else other than food body, food body, food body, food body. This went on for a number of years in various manifestations, including a lot of binges. I was kind of like a good girl eater 5 or 6 days a week, and then there would be these crazy, crazy binges. Maybe 1 or 2 day a week, there was a lot of laxative abuse. So getting to the travel aspect, what that looked like for me as a a teenager is when it really kicked in the most. I remember going to Hawaii with my family and not packing a bathing suit because I just couldn't confront it. Like, it just wasn't an option. And I was hysterical about it. You know, this is when I was probably about 16, 17, which is when I started to put weight on. I just couldn't confront the idea of running around on the beach in a suit, you know? And, so I thought, I'll just deal with it when I get there. And when I got there, I avoided the beach as much as I could. I avoided wearing a bathing suit. I was obsessed with what I was eating constantly. I was hanging out in the gym every day when my family was enjoying themselves in the sunshine. I was hanging out in the gym. I found a local ice cream store that had low-fat something or other, and I ate vast quantities of it a couple times a day. You know, my low-fat whatever that I was binging on, basically. And I couldn't be with my family, and I couldn't enjoy myself. And I hid from cameras, and I hid from people. And it took years till I understood that I had a spiritual illness, a spiritual malady. You know, for a long time I thought my malady was my body and my appearance. And then for a long time I thought my malady was food. And then it occurred to me that that was my solution, you know, that compulsive eating was my way of hiding, you know, and that obsessing about my body was my way of hiding and controlling. As a teenager and even as a young adult, traveling with my family, taking road trips, my attention was, I was always trying to lose weight. So my dad, who was a compulsive eater, was stopping nonstop. And he was a weird kind of a compulsive eater because he would go on a decision that he would go on a decision at the end of a trip that he was on a diet and he'd stick to it. And then he would decide on the trip, if it was a week long, he would decide, oh, who cares, I'm off of it. And he would put 10 pounds on over the course of a week. And then he would just be done with it. So he was a very kind of managed compulsive eater. I did not have that kind of control. So when I was on these road trips with him, all I was trying to do was diet and lose weight. And I'd be so mad at him for not stopping at healthier places. And it was so important to me. And I think about the years and the time lost as a kid and as a young woman with my father that I could have been available to him and intimate with him, you know, rather than obsessing about what I was going to eat. When I was 29, 30, so I told you my background was in dance. So I was working at the time on cruise ships, and I was singing and dancing in these big shows. And my father was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. And I was touring, these ships were traveling in the Mediterranean and the Caribbean and Northern Europe and around the world, actually. And all I could think about when my dad was dying, the rest of the family kind of gathered around to take care of my dad and to be there for him. And I wanted to escape. So I stayed on my ship contract, kept working. My costumes were ripping. I was missing entrances on stage because I couldn't get my zipper up because I was gaining so much weight during the period of his dying and his subsequent death. I was obsessed. I was fighting with the cast members. I had no friends. I was lonely. I was grieving. I was grieving the loss of my father. But what that looked like for me is nobody likes me. What's for lunch? Why can't I zip up my costumes? What's wrong with my body? I mean, that's the way my brain processes grief. That's the way my brain processes everything. That's my first line of defense. So that, when that contract ended, that brought me back to OA. Oh, I didn't mention that I had been in OA many, many years before. As a very young woman, maybe 19, 20 years old, and I just wasn't ready yet. I came back into OA after the death of my father, finally convinced that I had a spiritual malady and that was the problem that needed to be fixed rather than my body and rather than my food. To be clear, my body and my food were fixed. I'm not saying that I don't advocate for having a food plan or changing the way we eat. It was very important that I got abstinent and stayed abstinent. But that happened for me through working the 12 steps. Probably at my heaviest weight, let's see. So I guess 5 clothing sizes bigger than I am right now. I could look kind of like a normie, you know, and I could hide in society as kind of like a normie, but if you had a conversation with me about food or body or almost anything, you'd realize I was an absolute nutcase. That's what brought me back into program. So it was very centered around travel, my disease. And after about 3 years into program, I met the man who became my husband. And I experienced, aside from my husband working a program, I experienced this kind of freedom and all of this open headspace around the whole food and body issue. And I'm not obsessed with food anymore, and I'm not obsessed with my body anymore. And so my husband met me 3 years into recovery, so he met the non-obsessed version of me. And we both agreed on our very first date that travel was one of our big priorities, and that we were each looking for a life partner, and that we knew that whoever we ended up with, this had to be a really important thing. So we do travel like crazy together. In the time we've known each other, 10 years, we have been to Greece and Bulgaria, India twice, Italy 4 times, Mexico a couple times, Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, Fiji, Panama, Brazil, Argentina, to the Caribbean a couple times, to Tanzania, Africa, to Morocco, to Hawaii a couple of times, and a lot of domestic travel as well. It's a really, 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 really big part of my life, sometimes for work, but mostly for pleasure. I just absolutely love it, and it's so remarkable to travel and not have any considerations about my food. I don't plan very much. If things don't go the way I expect, it's okay. I can tolerate being hungry now, which is not something I knew I could do before I was in OA. I thought that if I went to bed hungry, I would spontaneously combust in the night. And it's okay for me to be hungry. So if I don't have food on me and I find myself in a place where something isn't available, it's okay if it's another hour or so. It's okay. Hunger for me is a little bit like other emotions. Like one of the things I have discovered about myself as an addict is that I don't tolerate feeling very well. That we all have feelings. We all don't get what we want sometimes in life. I think one of the things that distinguishes me as an addict is that when I don't, I want to fix it. You know, if I'm angry, if I'm sad, if I'm happy, if I'm tired, if I'm feeling sexy, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It has to be fixed. It has to be repaired. I'm not built with a normal, natural sense of like, this will pass and we'll move on to the next thing. You know, so, if I have a feeling, I want to eat over it. You know, if I have a feeling, I want to change the way I look. I want my body to look better. That's my wiring. Pre-recovery. So something like hunger, if I'm traveling and my food is an hour behind schedule, I'll tolerate that hunger today. I'll tolerate that hunger and nothing will happen. I won't like it. Let's be clear. I won't like it. But it does not, set me up for a binge or anything like that. I'm just carry on with my day. I don't have to, plan ahead too much as far as like, So it's awkward to talk about because I know we're all so different. And for some of you, this may be anathema. This may be the worst thing because you might need to do a lot of planning. But for me, what I did in my disease was so much planning because I was always on diets. And so I was always like figuring out what's my special food. And it's such freedom for me to not worry about what my special food is, you know, to just find what's available. I've been in countries where I don't like the food. When I see photographs of my travels in those countries, to be honest, I'm a little bit thinner. I look a little hungry, and I am, you know? And so in those countries, I travel with certain things just so I don't starve. I bring things like protein bars and, you know, little individual packages of peanut butter and things like that so that I know or oatmeal. I don't do well in Southeast Asian countries and places where breakfast is like fish or something like that. So I'll bring like packages of oatmeal or some like little packages of peanut butter and things like that that help me kind of start my day. I don't do well with big breakfast buffets. I don't like them. I'm not a junk food junkie. It's really not my thing. So I like kind of starting my day simply. It's actually my preference anyway. So I'll look for opportunities to do that. But if what I want is not available, it's not an opportunity for me to take it out on the people I'm with. And that's radical for me. That's really radical because for me it was always about finding the perfect food. And if I couldn't, then I was going to make everybody I was with, I was going to make their life difficult. This is accomplished not because there's anything great or special about me. This is accomplished because I have a portable program. And I take it with me when I travel. What that means for me is that I pray and meditate every morning just the same way I do at home. From the very first trip my husband and I took together when we were dating, I told him I need 15, 20 minutes in the morning, absolutely uninterrupted. And if I have to be the one to get up first, to get the bathroom, to have that 15, 20 minutes, that's what I do. And that's what I generally do is I wake up first. And when I'm in the bathroom in the morning, in the hotel room or wherever it is, tent, whatever, as I'm brushing my teeth and doing my morning ritual and getting ready, that's my prayer and meditation. I do the same thing I do at home, which is I go through all 12 steps and as they relate to whatever's going on with me for today. So I'm powerless over food and body obsession, but I'm also powerless over, with travel, there's a lot of things I feel very aware of being powerless over. My schedule, what food is available, the people I'm with, and because there's some personality, you know, when you travel with people, like family, for example, they come with these inconvenient personalities sometimes, you know? So I establish everything I'm powerless and challenged with. And then I remind myself that I'm insane and that there is a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. And then I turn all of those things that are challenging in that particular travel situation, I turn them over to that power greater than myself and I say, I need help. It's really easy. I'm on step four now. It's really easy for me to find resentments when I'm traveling because I'm very rarely traveling alone. So if there's people with me, I guarantee you I resent them. So I hand over all those resentments and I ask my higher power to help me see my part in those resentments. And I ask that I be relieved of whatever that is. And then step six and seven, I take a look at what my defects of character are. Like, what's making this travel difficult for me right now? Is it, is it, you know, is it, if it's fear of putting a bathing suit on, which I no longer have, by the way, but if it's that, you know, is it my vanity? Because again, I think my problem is my body. It's not my body, it's my vanity. And I think that's true at any size, by the way. I don't think it has anything to do with size. I just think my problem is my vanity. You know, if I'm fighting the people with I'm with, I think I realize my problem is actually my righteousness, my self-righteousness. I think it should be my way. You know, it's my control. And then I will say to my higher power, please relieve me of those defects of character that impede my ability to be useful to you and to my fellows, and replace them with better spiritual alternatives. Please remove my vanity and replace it with selflessness, my need to control and replace it with surrender, my perfectionism and replace it with acceptance, my fear and replace it with faith, that kind of stuff. And then I have a chat with my higher power about amends. Is there anyone on this trip I am owe amends to? Chances are yes. Chances are there's somebody that at some moment I might have been slightly bratty to at some point during the week. Not like before when it was all about me world. But there may be something, there may not even be something I owe a direct amends for. There may just be a way that I need to soften before the trip is over. I just might need to be a little more selfless, a little more loving. Almost time to wrap it up? Oh, 5 minutes, okay. So I'll look for any opportunities to be, to make amends. 10th step, continue to take personal inventory, and when I was wrong, promptly admit it. I write a daily 10th step at home and email it to my sponsor. I love this tool. This has been so useful to me. When I travel, I bring my iPad, and I purchased a little a digital keyboard, Bluetooth keyboard, at a hotel in Amsterdam when My husband and I were on the way to Tanzania for a safari, and our plane got delayed overnight, and we got stuck in this freezing cold, I call it like the Soviet bloc nursing home hotel. It was just the airline just put us up in the worst, most awful, with this terrible buffet and dingy, depressing rooms and freezing. And I bought this Bluetooth keyboard laptop in the airport in Amsterdam, to protect me from myself, because I was so angry. And by the way, it was the night before New Year's Eve, and I was so self-involved and just terrified and frustrated. And this keyboard saved my butt, because I got to this hotel that night and wrote, just like purged this 10th step. My husband was sound asleep, you know, and I was sobbing and just typing. And it was to my three, closest girlfriends in program, you know, this 10th step. And I hit send, and I was like, it goes. It releases. It's so important to me. And then I was able to be kind and loving to my husband the next day. That is how I managed to stay abstinent when I travel, you know, because I purged all that stuff, you know, and then I'm not so fixated on the food anymore, which is what I go to. It is just what I go to. But when I do that, there's all this weird empty space left in my brain for people and places. You know, for all of the beautiful, amazing, like, temples and cathedrals and tribes and villages and you know, everything, scenery and landscape and everything that we get to see when we travel. And food, by the way. And food, because I absolutely enjoy my food when I travel. I am a bona fide foodie. You know, in addition to being a compulsive eater, I am a foodie. I'm a good cook and I'm a good eater, and I like good food, and I'm not scared of it. And gosh, when I go to Italy, I eat so well, and I don't gain weight when I travel. I love the food, and I magically put the fork down. I don't understand it. It is beyond my comprehension. I don't get it. All I know is I work these 12 steps, and that when I do, there's like this little alarm that goes off that says, you're done eating, and the fork goes down. And when I struggle with it, I ask my higher power for help, and I'm given the help. And if I'm not given the help, then I have tools and a fellowship that I can always connect with. You know, this is what a remarkable age that we can connect with one another so much more easily now than we used to. I left up on step 11, which I pretty much talked about by saying that when I'm in the morning, that 15 minutes that I'm taking by myself is me praying and meditating. And step 12 is tricky when you travel, because I'm not always at meetings when I travel, on occasion, but there's not always the opportunity. But I will look for ways. In my family, there are compulsive eaters, and I will look for ways to carry the message to them. Not by doing any PR or promotion for OA, more by when they complain about how fat they're feeling or how much they've eaten at lunch, I carry the message by eating moderately and compassionately listening to them when they complain about their bodies and say, I understand, I know that feeling really well. if it's something you want to talk about, I'm here. 2 minutes? Okay, beautiful. There's something very Vanna White about this whole thing. I just gave away my age right there. Anyway, so I do think that there is an opportunity to carry the message when we travel, even if I'm not getting to a meeting. And I do think it's a very important purpose for me. And, it doesn't say we carry the message of, here's how I work the steps to a newcomer. It says we carry the message of recovery. And I can carry the message of recovery to anyone at any time. I can go to work and carry the message of recovery. I can go on a trip and carry the message of recovery. I can be with my family and carry the message of recovery, even if they're not compulsive eaters. Although, strangely, the universe sends a lot of compulsive eaters in my direction. I seem to attract them. I'm very grateful to this program. Traveling is one of the values in the world that I hold most dear. I see it as something that shapes character and helps me to be less self-involved, which is my nature as an addict. So the fact that I've seen so much of the world and been able to connect with so many different cultures and people that live their lives differently than I do has really helped give me perspective that my way is not the only way, you know. And it's not the only way on this panel, as you can hear. We all do it really, really differently. And it's all valid, you know. But I'm really grateful to have so much space in here, let alone the fact that I've had the same size blue jeans for the last 13 years. I forgot the qualifiers. Whatever the 5 or so clothing sizes up that I was, that came down after about a year or so in program. I've been maintaining the same body size and abstaining for next month will be 14 years. And I'm super grateful. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Thank you. Now's the time for questions and answers. If people can raise their hand, I'll call on as many as possible. Your questions can be directed to one person at a time or the general panel to answer. Please be aware that this is being recorded. So when you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. Who'd like to ask a question? Please.
More than 3 ounces of something, okay? And if you have little baby food, fruit, which is delicious and is just pure fruit, granted it probably doesn't have the fiber that we need, but if you freeze it, it can act as to keep other food cold, and by the time you're ready for your meal, it will be thawed enough to just suck it right out of that little container that they come in now. So that's handy. And my question is there a particular, I know you said you take your books with you, but is there a particular OA piece of literature that you really find useful while you're traveling?
I could answer one thing. At home in the morning, I generally have two books that... thank you. Two books that I read, but in traveling, there's an OA for Today that's got a daily thing that I always take with me. And this little handy 12-step thing, I probably have it in my, that I always have in my bag. Because sometimes you'll go to a meeting, no one's there, whatever, you use that as the nucleus of the meeting. So if you look through all the brochures and see what interests you, what strikes you, I think that's what you take with you. It's small, it's light, it takes no room. And I guess it's even better on the phone, but in case you're in a place where there's no cell sites or you don't have service, you know that's going to work, you know. Anything?
The question was, what type of books do we take with us when we travel, for instance, on my phone? I'm looking at it now. I have The Voices of Recovery for Today, and I have some other Hazelton books. The most important one is the big book that I have on my phone. It just comes with me everywhere, and it's fantastic. So it's the Kindle version. I mean, you can download a Kindle even if you don't have a Kindle and then put your books on there.
And I have a 12-step app
my phone. Yeah, this is Nikki, compulsive eater. I have a 12-step app on my phone. I'm happy to show it to you after the meeting if you like.
Next question.
My question is, the places where I travel for work three times a year don't have meetings, and it's international, so it's kind of challenging to do, like, phone meetings or whatever. Have you ever, like, Skyped into an actual meeting, maybe back home? Is anything like that possible, if anyone knows? Because I'm leaving in a few weeks, so I'm trying to get my mind right for that. Any thoughts on that?
The question is simply whether when international traveling means it's hard to do it in any other way, has anyone had experience Skyping into meetings, or any other suggestions when meetings are not generally available?
I have not, but I'm sure that it is possible. I'm furthest thing from a techie you can imagine, so...
The question was how to access meetings on the road if there are no in-person meetings. And I'm the opposite of you, which is I'm a techie kind of person. Certainly Skype works really well, and obviously that's an outside enterprise. So, oh, wait, it does not endorse Skype. As long as you have a Wi-Fi connection, why can't you access a telephone meeting? Just go to oa.org. Just be aware. You can even plug in your time zone. So this way you can get up at 3 in the morning and have a live meeting. So that's something you can do. There's also online meetings where you can just type in as well any hour of the day or night. But really there are OA meetings almost all the time, and there are people that log in from all sorts of countries, and they're all different languages as well. Absolutely, it works beautifully. Good question.
Of course, there are also podcasts, which isn't interactive, but at least things that you can listen to that could help.
Ditto.
Anyone else with a question, please?
Question here.
Right. Question from
actually,
the panel.
Actually, something, this is what I was talking about, the Just for Today. It's just the handiest thing to have, and anyone will have room for that, you know. The one thing I think we neglected was cruises, which is a whole other world, which at first I thought could be real scary. Years ago, I'd been on with my parents on traveling, and they would say, what dessert? And my father would say, what do you mean, which dessert? Okay, so they were a little overweight, parents. But in later years, I've been on a lot of trips, and a few years ago, one was a jazz cruise, and the wonderful thing was you always heard about the midnight buffet and all the food. It was a midnight jazz concert. There was no food. It was just a band and music playing, and I have found that on other cruises where there's unlimited food, is unlimited, and there were a buffet, or you order from a menu, or they'll bring you room service. It's really amazing. It's still your same body, and 24 hours in a day, and I eat the same way. It's a great time to try different foods and all that I know I can eat, but after it becomes like fearless, and there is always a meeting. It usually will say a Bill W. meeting, and on most trips, I say around 4:30 in the afternoon, there's a room if you look for it. And there's always some program people, whether AA or whatever it is, so you know there's that meeting there. There's tons of exercise things to do. A few years ago, the OA Foothill Group organized a 3-day at Ensenada program people, and there were about, I don't know, 50 or 60 of us maybe, which was great because you had your meetings there, and the rest of the time you go off on your own. So I just say I think we can be unafraid of cruises, I think.
Just to follow up on the cruise question, did you know that OA has a cruise? Region 3 does a cruise, and I just pulled it up on my phone. It is March of this year, 22nd to the 29th, out of Galveston, Texas, and it goes to the Caribbean. I just want to read the part about the food, because I would think, well, what is the point of a cruise without constant eating? Why even go on the cruise? But OA has addressed that issue. Cruising with other OA members is a wonderful experience, the food taking its proper place as nourishment rather than the center of interest. So there is an OA cruise. Sign up now, Region 3.
Yay. There's a question out there.
Please, next question.
If at all, has it helped you with one of the promises in the big book that says we have ceased fighting any
fighting, you know, to stop fighting.
Yes. Yes, it absolutely has, because travel for me, it forces a certain surrender. I mean, the thing is, pre-recovery, I would say travel forces a surrender, but I didn't surrender anyway. You know, I mean, I would find a way to control and manage anything I could. But I think one of the things that I love about travel is there's so many unknown variables. It's a really, like, easy and obvious, like, when I'm at home in my routine, I can sort of suffer from the delusion that I'm in control. It's like easier for me to get into like my little regimented thing. And when I travel, where there's so many unknown variables, especially internationally, especially in third world countries, you got to go with the flow. You just have to. And having done it, the not going with the flow way, was so fattening for me and so crazy making for me. Like, me not surrendering is me in the food, and me surrendering is me seeing what's around me on the journey.
Hi. I would say what it helped me learn is food is not the enemy. Food is a thing that's laying there on the table, you know. It's not doing anything. It's all for me. And so the great thing about being in situations you can't control is that maybe you can't control the whole situation. I can control what I put in my mouth. And invariably, there are things, maybe not my favorite foods, maybe not what I would choose, but things that I can eat on my abstinence. Or if not, maybe again, as you said, a few hours go by that I would have liked to eat, but I didn't. So I'll eat something later. That won't kill me. But you just learned that you really can adjust and be flexible, you know.
And the question about how do you stop fighting food while traveling, step one says I've lost the battle. Okay, I am powerless. I put down my boxing gloves every morning instead of fighting everything. So step one, I'm powerless over food, so I have lost. I have surrendered. That really, for me, is the stop fighting step. And step two gives me the solution, which is to turn it over to higher power and let him fight the battles for me so I don't have to deal with it anymore. That's the way I look at not fighting, is by working the steps, and it happens.
Next question, please. Any more queries? Yes, ma'am. Hi, Angie. Question was, how have you experienced getting comfortable with the discomfort of being thrown off your schedule?
I think what you're asking is like the quintessence of recovery. Like, I think like that's the deal. That is what we have to learn as addicts, is getting comfortable with discomfort. And then I think it's really hard, and I think it's a life's work for any human, but especially us. And, you know, you had asked as a little addendum to your question, was it harder in the beginning? Yeah, a lot. It was a lot harder in the beginning. Especially with food. It's not that hard for me with food today. I don't struggle with food, because if I do, I'm gonna lose. I mean, if I put on my boxing gloves and get in the ring with food, I'm gonna lose. I don't fight food. I surrender to food, because food will kick my butt every time. So the food struggle has gotten a lot easier, but the life struggles, I have to remind myself, don't fight this. Sit with this discomfort. I had to do one the other day with a neighbor who's being kind of an a-hole to me. He wrote me a kind of a threatening letter where he expressed a whole bunch of opinions about me. And my first thought was, I have to defend myself. I have to show him why he's wrong. And I did that, and I didn't send it. I did the nasty letter, and I didn't send. And then I said to my higher power, What letter would I write if I had no fear and I had no anger? And I wrote him another letter, and I sent that one. And what the bottom line of it was tolerating his opinion of me. He doesn't like me. He thinks I'm in between him and what he wants. It's okay. That is something that over 13 years of recovery, I've gotten, it's like a muscle that's gotten stronger and stronger and stronger. The tolerating discomfort. With food in the beginning, I made a lot of outreach. A lot. I don't make nearly as much outreach today. Most of my time spent on the phone today is with my sponsees, you know, but I couldn't get through a day in the beginning. For the first year, my eating tended to be between like midnight and like 2 a.m. kind of thing. And so I had a person that I called every single night around those hours, a fellow that was willing to take my call. And I would talk to him about food for about 30 seconds. And then I would unload everything for like another hour. And God bless this man. He was willing to listen. And I just purged feelings. And after a period of time of doing this, I started noticing that the impulse to eat late at night went away. And it was replaced with the impulse to connect. You know, I found that what he gave me in hearing everything I had to say was more fulfilling to me than the late night whatever snack. You know, it's not as instantly gratifying as food. I'm not going to lie. There's a certain magic click for me and a certain combination of like dairy and sugar and carbohydrate. There's a special little something there that no human being has ever been able to give me. But I have found when I put down that sugary, dairy, whatever, carbohydrate thing and pick up the phone or reach out to another fellow, I am given something that is ultimately far more satisfying. But I do have to sit with some discomfort to get there. I do. And I don't have to make a huge promise like, I will never eat again. All I have to do is say, you can still eat, Nikki. That thing is right there. You're just going to make this one call first. And then when it's over, you can go eat. And I bargain with myself, you know, and then like you just have to get through the next 5 minutes, the next 6 minutes. And then eventually I don't eat the thing. But short answer, yeah, it was really hard, and it's easier now.
I think everything gets easier as you get more comfortable with it, and I don't think time can be replaced by anything. The food discomfort is hunger. And one of the things that helps me deal with it is that joyous sound of your stomach growling. My stomach's growling. I know that I'm physically hungry, and it's a wonderful sound to hear. So is it worth hours of hunger? I don't know, but the hours of hunger, if it doesn't happen to work out that I should be eating now, like sometimes while I'm having lunch at home, I'm watching TV, and my lunch is finished, and the show's on, and I'm thinking, what else should I have? What do I want? And I've realized recently, I don't want more food. It's just I can't justify watching this stupid show without eating, because then I'm just watching this stupid show. So my choice is big glasses of water, shut the show off, go on about my business, things that I should be doing. So some things just happen with time. I mean, it just never occurred to me before. The first 6 months or a year or so of this abstinence of 22 years, I was every day planning my food 3-4 times a day, phone calls. Why can't I have this? Why should I do here? Oh, my God, something happened. What am I going to do about this? And, you know, I've gone out to lunches when I had to where I had to eat my lunch at home. And I had, like, a Diet Coke, an iced tea, and a water. And, you know, nobody at the table mentioned it. No one said a word. It's like we have to learn. People are self-obsessed with what they're eating. They don't care what I'm eating. You know, and I just had stuff around me, and they had their stuff, and I had mine. And it was fine. I think we just do what we have to do. If someone has a problem, it's their problem. It's not ours. So some of it, and sadly, you can't just speed up that time it takes to get more comfortable and more comfortable in dealing with things for me.
And the question about, is it harder at the beginning to not eat, to be not eating certain things? I think you alluded to that. And when I hear not eating, the first thing I think about is willpower. Because what that's inferring to me is that I want to eat it, but I'm not going to eat it. And that to me is willpower. And that to me is I still haven't fully accepted step one, that I'm powerless over food. I don't want to eat crushed glass today. I don't want to drink gasoline. I don't want to eat this piece of newspaper. So I'm not thinking what I can't eat. Because what happens if I feel the same way about, if I'm, let's see if I can say this, if I'm neutral towards the food, even the foods that I do eat, in other words, there's really no different. I'm not sure I'm explaining this as well as I should. But the concept here is to stop fighting the food. And for me, not to think of what I can't eat. It's like I'm not obsessing right now that I can't go swimming today. In other words, I can't go swimming. I'd like to go swimming, but I can't go swimming. I can't go swimming, but I'd like to go swimming. So I'm not going to go swimming. Does it get easier over time? If I change my mindset to say, I'm doing what I want to do. People ask me, what is my food plan? They say, Greg, what's your food plan? And I say, my food plan is very rare in this program. I eat whatever I want to eat. And that is the, I'll say that again, I eat whatever I want to eat. I don't want to eat crushed glass. Okay, I don't want to eat a brownie. But I don't fight it either. So I eat what I want to eat. And it's a tremendous freedom, I think, to feel that way about food after taking step one and two and the rest of the steps and continue to work the steps out of the big book. It's that freedom to know that I eat what I want to eat. I don't think about what I can't eat. I don't turn my back, if I'm in a bakery, to the sweets behind me. I can sit at a table with you having an ice cream sundae, and it makes no difference to me because I eat what I want to eat. You can't force me to eat crushed glass. You can't force me to eat a newspaper, and you can't force me to eat ice cream. It's all the same to me.
Another question, please. Yes, please. The question deals with, well, when you deal with planes and traveling, what actual food do you pack and take with you?
I don't actually bring frozen stuff. Well, what I'm talking more about is for instance, ice packs. Or sometimes I will freeze some things. But most of the stuff I just keep cold. But you can freeze liquids. And that's not a problem. So anything frozen goes through. Part of my food plan is where I have non-sugar frozen yogurt, 100-calorie thing. That's my snack in the afternoon. I'm very active, and so I burn a lot of calories and whatnot. That's not a problem for me. And I do freeze that. And they look at me and I say, it's frozen. I know the rules.
Yeah, I know.
Another question? The question was, how going through your day when your energy is really down, do you get it back up?
Do you want to go first? For me, it goes back to that tolerating discomfort thing, is that especially, I don't know where you are in your abstinence, but in my earlier abstinence, it was more about like limiting my expectations of myself. So if my energy is low, let it be low. I really advise my sponsees, especially in the beginning, that like they really have one major accomplishment for the day, which is be abstinent. And then I feel like the longer we're abstinent, we can start to gradually add a little more. But even today at this point, mostly as an addict for me, it's about accept the condition that is. So if my energy is low, be okay with my energy being low.
you know, and there are things I can do, that's for today. For today, except that the energy is low. For my future, what can I do to work on my energy? Get to bed by a certain hour, have meal time, you know, design my meals at times that support more energy, incorporate exercise into my day, like those things that help fuel energy. But in the given day, energy's low, except energy being low. And that's the ideal. That's the ideal me on a good day. The not so good me is there are days when I might have a little something that gives me a little pick me up, but I do it within my abstinence. Going outside of my abstinence is it's just not an option. Just not even remotely a consideration.
I have one really calorie free, no weight gain. If you have the luxury of the time, take a 20-minute nap. God bless naps. So a half an hour or something, you know, it can like get you through the day. And sometimes your body's tired and you just need to take a rest for a while. And God, I mean, I didn't know that when I was younger, but I've discovered it now. Some days it's true. You're tired and you start looking, why am I so tired? Sometimes you have to do stuff you don't feel like doing. That can really be exhausting when you have to deal with this and deal with that and you don't want to. And I've discovered it's one of the reasons sometimes we eat when we shouldn't be or did before abstaining. Because you don't want to face whatever it is you have to deal with. We have higher powers now. We have tools to use to help us get through that. And I think sometimes you think, what have I eaten? Did I eat protein food? Did I eat stuff that turns to sugar? And boom, the energy is up and down. So sometimes you'll find the answer in some of those things. But naps are great.
I'm a great believer in holistic wellness type of thing. Tied in with this program. Because this program is a recovery not just from food and weight. It's an emotional, spiritual, and physical program for me. If I am feeling low energy, I have to ask myself, do I have a craving for carbs? I can say, oh, I'm really low energy, but really what I'm doing is fooling myself and making an excuse. I have a craving for carbs. I am not abstinent. I need sugar. That's really what my mind and my body is telling me. So I have to get over the craving because I have the craving, as explained in the doctor's opinion of the big book, that will then trigger the mental obsession. Okay? And round it goes. Then tomorrow I'll also be tired at 3:00. But getting real briefly back to the holistic thing, how's my sleeping? Am I sleeping well at night? Am I moving? I have found for me the best solution for being tired is to move. Get up off my butt, take a walk, do exercise, do yoga in the morning. It's a combination of physical, emotional, and spiritual. And then I find I don't have that need for sugar or a donut at 3:00 PM. And it's an amazing recovery. That, to me, is part of my recovery.
And I also forgot to say caffeine, coffee, sometimes Diet Coke, whatever, if you don't have problems with it, can really be a quick pick-me-up. Instead of the donut, I can have a calorie-free Diet Coke. It's the same thing. Thank you.
Any other questions? No other questions? Well, thank you so much for coming and participating. And we'd like to thank Greg, Lillian, and Nikki for sharing their experience, strengths, and hope.
Can we thank them? Thank you guys so much for being here and for contributing to our recovery.
Ditto.
Thank you all. And the next session will begin in this room, I think, in about 15 minutes. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Salome. Salome. Nikki, nice to meet you, Salome.